has been so wild lately. He doesn't seem to listen, he doesn't obey my commands, and we can't even bribe him with treats.
He's gotten so out of hand, he may even have to be put down.
God is not the problem here. The problem is the people who want to be the leader of the pack. We reintroduce God. We retrain people. You're listening to The God Whisperers. You're listening to the world-famous God Whisperers. I'm Craig D'Onofrio.
I'm Bill Swirlo.
How can you go wrong with Oingo Boingo, Dead Man's Party? Halloween is upon us.
Nice.
Boo.
The start of the shopping season. Used to be Thanksgiving, you notice? Now it's Halloween.
Yeah, well, actually, I think back to school pretty much kicks off the
Labor Day. Labor Day is the start of the holiday shopping season.
yes, indeed. By the way, I did say it. I'm Craig D'Onofrio. He's Bill Swirla, and yes, and his gong, his lovely gong.
Inquire no more, you feral beast.
Haven't pushed that button in a while.
Yes. Well, here's one for you.
You are a sad, strange little man, and you have my pity.
There you go. So, how's everything out in California, Bill?
It's pretty peaceful, actually. The crickets are chirping even during the day. Weather's good, dry, summer-like, okay. Still summer. Things are going fine. Hey, front end. I wanna apologize.
Uh-oh.
A couple of weeks ago on the show, I basically rolled my brothers in the district under the bus so I could vent about contemporary worship and how much I don't like it. And I don't like that. I don't like what I did there. You know, I used our pastor's conference as kind of like the example of why of my own unhappiness, and it's why I think it's one thing to talk about, you know, the problems of certain hymns or songs or blah blah blah. It's another thing to, you know, identify like a whole group of people, including some of my good colleagues in the Pacific Southwest District. So, bad move on my part. My apologies to my brothers for the running critique of our worship at the pastor's conference.
As a called and ordained servant of the word, I proclaim Christ's forgiveness to you in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
Oh, amen. This wasn't a confessional here. Just an apology. you know, I think sometimes we get caught in our various hobby horses of things.
Not me, never.
And, you know, kind of forget that there are people who are trying really hard. I wouldn't want to try to navigate some of our districts and the great diversity that they embrace. It's not an easy thing to do. And whatnot. But, you know, I think we could talk about the ins and outs of worship forms and what makes a good hymn and what doesn't make a good hymn, and the fact that loud music causes my ears to ring, and that's across the board. Even the organ, I was reminded, I was at St. Louis, and when that organ gets too loud, it gets painful.
Is it about as we get older, our ears get more sensitive? This makes no sense to me, Bill. The more deaf we get, and yet the more sensitive our ears are at the same time.
Well, yeah, they're tied together. I mean, we can't discriminate sounds anymore. I can't carry on a conversation in a loud restaurant. That takes a tremendous amount of concentration to do. I was at a restaurant the other day that there was one of these, you know, it's kind of these converted warehouse storefronty type restaurants where everything's exposed and the brick and everything. And it was loud. It was real, and the music was loud. The conversation was loud. And I like that because it's lively, you know, the place is happening. It's a very young vibe, and it's all very good. But I can't hear the people across the table from me. So I think it's time to be hooked up with those high-priced hearing aids, I think. That'll be a new dimension. But, well, yeah, paying for the sins of my youth and all that rock and roll in the 70s. Primarily, although there was some rock and roll in the 90s and the early 2000s that kind of finished my hearing off, too. Watch out for the small venue concerts. Those are death to your ears. Oh, man. Always bring earplugs. Even if you look like a dork with orange foam rubber sticking out of your head, it's far better than what I've got going right now. But anyway, it was one of those things where, you know, you do the show, you listen to the show, and you ever, like, come home from, like, a party or something where you had a good time, but you don't feel quite right about how some of the things went down. And that was kind of it. You know, I've been trying to extend the olive branch to a lot of my brothers. I've been trying to be less of a critic and much more of a colleague. And I've been trying to encourage others to do the same, too. You know, that you can be just a constant source of no, or you can be constructive. And I'm trying to be more constructive about these things, because I think there's this polarity in our circles of what sometimes is called the confessional side, and then in response to that, the missional side. You know, it used to be church growth and stuff like that, but the missional people are different. They're not into institutional growth nearly as much as the church growth crowd used to be. But, you know, none of these things are things that nobody wants, okay? I've never met somebody who's interested in mission who says, the heck with the confessions. Okay, I've never met anybody who's wants to be faithful to the confessions and say, the heck with missions. We don't need to be doing this. Nobody needs to hear about Jesus. You know, so these are really like false camps. And I think because they're polarized, we're missing out on some important conversations, I think. So I'm trying to do things a little differently.
Speaking of missions, the God Whisperers are going missional.
Yeah. is this the let's raise money to get Craig out of the country?
The big rollout is afoot here.
Well, tell us. We haven't talked about this.
So yeah,
we haven't discussed this. We've been under a cone of silence.
I have received and accepted a call to serve as a missionary in Eurasia, throughout all of Eurasia.
That's a big territory there. I hope you get a mileage allowance.
My office extends from Iceland to Turkey.
Good heavens!
How's that? That's Iceland, a lot of territory.
That's an idea. What exactly are you going to do?
I've been called to serve as the director of communications for the region. So what I will be doing is a lot of what I've been doing, you know, especially back in the days of Pirate Christian Radio and that sort of thing, helping churches, church bodies, even many Lutheran church bodies that are in fellowship with us and some that are seeking fellowship, to put together recording studios. I'll be doing audio and video production. I'll be doing newsletters and blogs and all sorts of stuff with our current missionaries and these church bodies. And basically, I'm going to help the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod get into the 2000s in the world of technology, media technology.
From Iceland to Turkey.
So hopefully, by the time that I have been there for a couple of years, I'm hoping that our technological abilities will be up to like the year 2005.
Where are they now, by your estimates?
They Morse finally got code. Rid of the mimeograph here at the IC and went over to
loss.
Xeroxes.
A great loss, I might add.
I missed that smell.
Yeah.
No, actually, I'm just having fun with that. But we don't have a whole lot of we do have some video stuff going on with missionaries, but not much. And not much in the way of podcasting.
So are you doing this in English or some other language?
Well, I've already been working with the Bishop of Latvia helping him put together a package. And hopefully I'll be there to train him on how to use it. I think they have three or four radio stations already wanting to run theological, gospel-centered programming from the Lutheran Church in Latvia that we're in fellowship with.
Now, when it comes to all this equipment and stuff, is that going? Are you going to be carting that stuff over, or are you going to be looking for it on the black market?
Actually, I was surprised going through a music shop in Latvia. Their prices really aren't that much higher than ours, which is amazing because if you want to buy a MacBook in like the Czech Republic instead of America, it's like $800 more.
Okay.
But when it comes to microphones,
is it the real deal or is it some kind of
a Yamaha board and MXL or even Shure microphones, and you know, it's all brand name stuff.
And so you're going to be the man in communications, audio and visual for Eurasia from Iceland to Turkey.
That, and I will put my illiteracy hard to work on social media and other things like that.
Social media. Are you going to have altar and pulpit? Are you going to be doing any preaching, teaching, and pastoral stuff over there?
There will be opportunities to do that. And they're talking about maybe planting another English-speaking church in the region there that I may be serving as a part-time pastor at or something like that, but we'll see.
Where are you going to be residing? Where's going to be home for you?
We will be living in the Czech Republic somewhere in the Prague area.
Oh, my goodness. All right.
So
this is going to be an adventure.
Yeah, I'm going to have to learn to speak Czech a lot better than I do.
Yeah. Yeah, good luck with that. And
I'm pretty much at a toddler's ability right now, if that.
Are you taking a crash course in Czech?
You know, here's the problem, is all of the expats that I've been in touch with over there, I said, how's the Pimsleur course or the Rosetta Stone or any of these? And they said, just save your time, don't do it. And I said, well, why is that? And they said, it's like learning Middle English. No one actually talks like that.
Yeah, that's tricky. You need to find a native speaker.
Yeah, so that's pretty much how we're going to have to go is native speakers and learn all the idioms and all the rest. So, hey, Ted Geese, speaking of foreigners,
Ted
is on the line somewhere. Are you there, Ted?
Our Canadian brother.
He's just kind of hanging out.
He is.
So, Ted, as one who speaks Canadian, how would you recommend that I would learn a foreign language like Canadian?
You just got to make sure all of your U's are there.
Extra U's.
Like when you spell like color and savior.
Yes.
Oh,
you are, yes.
I like dropping those in kind of randomly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it means English.
Does one need to be consistent with the U's?
Yeah, you know, that's not so bad. You need to do that, but but it's not such a big deal. Like, there are some little Canadianese things. I'm sure all the states have this kind of stuff, too. There is, of course, in Saskatchewan, if you're wearing a certain item of clothing, it will be called a bunny hug. And then if you're in Alberta, it might be called a hoodie.
A bunny hug.
A bunny hug. A hoodie is a bunny hug?
That is a authentic Saskatchewan term.
For a hoodie?
Yeah.
You must not have any street gangs in Saskatchewan, then, I would imagine.
They're, you know, or we do.
If you do.
They wear bunny hugs like everyone else.
Oh, my goodness.
I got my bunny hug and my gat.
Yeah.
That just doesn't sound right.
Yeah, they're going to pop a cap.
Pop a cap wearing my bunny hug. See, no. It just doesn't.
No. It's not working for me.
By the way, Ted is the pastor at Mount Olive Lutheran Church, Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. So there.
I am.
Yeah. Just so everyone knows who you are. Now, a lot of people are probably gnashing their teeth and crying right now. The God Whisperers hopefully will not be going away. We've got some workarounds where we will just simply take on a more international flavor.
I can't wait.
International.
I can't wait for the technical difficulties that will ensue.
Oh, it'll be phenomenal.
What's our timetable here? When are we going off KFUO? Are we going to be done?
Oh, we need to figure all that out. You and I need to.
Are we going to be an indie podcast again with all the edginess that we once had?
There's a good chance that will occur.
Ooh, I can't wait. I can use bad language again.
Bill will be able to cuss once again.
Nice.
But we'll talk about all that. In the meantime,
This is a nation that obeyeth not the voice of the Lord their God, nor receiveth correction.
I really miss that. I just miss that.
Yeah.
They are like twins born from different wombs.
That's one of Ted's favorite movies right there, isn't it?
There you go.
I just dropped a dime in the studio, and now this place is worth 10 cents more.
I heard that. Do you want to do some housekeeping?
The God Whispers hotline is spells Manly Doctors, 626-593-7713. You can call and leave a message, and we may
leave a message. Do not leave a massage. We really don't want that.
They are like twins.
GodWhispers.org, GodWhispers@gmail.com. That's all you need to know. Let's go to the mailbag.
The God Whispers mailbag brought to you by lovely Press Duck in Prague.
Bill? Prague.
Oh, such good duck.
Yeah, good duck. This is from Frank. Hey, Pastors of Bacon Lovers Anonymous. I had a question about the Missouri Synod's stance about the government's role in speaking against greed and hoarding.
Hoarding.
Hoarding, H-O-R-D-I-N, hoarding, greed and hoarding.
Yeah, I got that.
Our nation is abundant in resources, yet we are finding poverty and unemployment is growing in our country. Is he running for office here, you think? We have many very wealthy people who have loopholes through the tax system, and many corporations likewise pay little or no tax. These people are often living very luxuriously, and many companies overwork and underpay their people, that's for sure. Medical benefits are being slashed. Workers sometimes working 56-hour work weeks, and yet they're finding it ever more difficult to pay back their student loans and mortgages and still pay for utilities, hygiene products, food, and clothing. So here's the gist of it. It's a long letter. I by no means am advocating a raw socialism, as Ted is acquainted with up in our sister to the north. Yet capitalism only works if a vast majority of people actually have capital to work with, so as to invest in their educations, new technologies, and commerce. Since the majority of people are finding it difficult to make enough money to live comfortably, let alone invest in our economy, while some live in ornate luxury with government protection via tax breaks and at
that's
the expense
you.
Of the working class. That's me. Yes, that's right.
Yeah, ornate luxury.
Should we as Christians not speak out about this? Our Lutheran theology from the Scriptures, the Confessions, our service book have a robust collection to say about wealth and those who abuse it and those who don't. And then he gives some examples, all of them good. Getting back to the gist, he's asking why are confessional Lutherans not more vocal about the sin of greed and hoarding in the public forum, in the same way we are about the murder of the unborn or the restructuring of the family, that's code language for gay marriage. Is not this just as devastating to human life and social order? And then some more rhetorical questions, and on we go. But anyway,
Blue, you're my boy!
What do you think? Should Lutheranism, confessional Lutheranism, be more outspoken about the sin of greed and hoarding? And I think the inherent greed that drives capitalism.
There's a great show. I haven't seen it in a while. I'm not sure if it's still on, about hoarders. And
no, not the pathologically hoarding. He's talking about like the accumulation of wealth be above and beyond what one needs.
Well, what does one need?
Well,
you know that hoarder show though. Like you never see them go into a house and find like gold.
No, stuffed animals. They have stuffed animals.
Yes, it's mostly garbage.
Yeah.
It's the stuff they don't actually need or
but,
couldn't
what a
use.
Special
or
you
whatever.
Are.
But that's a that's a psychological malady there, that kind of hoarding. Really kind of, I think, just a reticence to part ways with the past. That seems to be the common thread. There's something they're not letting go, which the stuff kind of symbolizes. And it's like I don't get rid – I still have in the back of my garage somewhere all my old textbooks from the science days.
I still have all my old theology books that I...
Yeah, and you haven't practiced theology in years.
I just channel Nagel. It's just natural.
So chemistry books are only going to be helpful if you go Breaking Bad.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and that's actually not that complicated.
But speaking of channeling...
Dangerous, but not complicated.
Of channeling great thinkers, I'm going to go ahead and channel Milton Friedman for a moment here.
Okay, all right.
And hearken back to the days of the 1980s. And this idea of having more than you need sort of thing, I do believe in the idea of trickle-down economics. If I make $15 billion, I'm going to buy toys. And when I buy toys, I'm employing people to A, take care of my toys, B, manufacture my toys, C, sell my toys, and all the rest of that sort of thing. So there's a matter of the more I have, unless if I'm a total hoarder and I just, put it all in the bank and never use any of it, I'm going to create more wealth for others. And so I think that this is sound policy also, that this idea of the rich are taking advantage of the poor, I disagree with that. The rich are creating work for the poor. They're creating jobs for the poor. And so if we look at people like Donald Trump and we say, well, he's got too much, we should take it away. Fine, we take away 90% of what he has, we redistribute it, it's gone. But yeah. If we say, let's help Donald Trump buy more airplanes and yachts and Ferraris and all that kind of stuff, we employ more people in the economy.
I remember when they took away the tax breaks for yachts, and luxury boats and all of that.
The industry dried up.
Yeah, and who got hurt? The shipbuilders and the people, the people who were building and maintaining boats. It just dried up an industry. I think he has a point, and I've said this before: is that socialism has as its presupposition that everybody is good and they can be convinced of a common good to which they will sacrifice their own interests to work toward a common good. That's like the presupposition of socialism, which would be fine, I suppose, if everybody was born again from above.
Right.
But they're not. And capitalism has as its presupposition that everybody is pretty much in it for themselves. Now, de Tocqueville had a little bit of a caveat. It's people working in their enlightened self-interest. So there's a little bit of a, it's not just self-interest, but it's enlightened self-interest, which makes one kind of ask the question, who's doing the enlightening and how are they enlightened? But still, we're in it for ourselves. So we acquire stuff, and in the acquisition of stuff for ourselves, we support those who make the stuff and sell the stuff and transport the stuff. That's the theory that you have going there.
There may also be more preaching actually connected to this than the emailer may expect, because discontent, right, is connected to greed. And coveting is part of that. So, I think that there's probably a fair amount of times where that does get brought up by people who are, in the pulpit.
Well, it gets 2 out of 10 commandments, coveting.
Yeah.
Depending on how you number them, I suppose. And it's one of those sins you can't tell that you're doing. So it's, and in fact, we, now that we are entering into the shopping season, there's like a lift on the ban on coveting. This is the season when you're supposed to want everything. Paul says that greed is idolatry. It's the heart unbuckled from God. It sits right next to the absence of fear, love, and trust in God above all things.
We need to take a break, but we'll come back with more riveting whatever we do. Stick around. I wish you could swim like dolphins.
heavens can sway.
Turn me off, Lord.
Turn him off.
Turn me off, Lord.
Turn him off.
Turn me off,
yes.
Lord.
Turn him off. He's gonna keep singing till you turn him off.
The Spirit got in me and crossed my wires.
He's gonna keep singing till you turn him off.
They are like
to sing is my objective and my only desire.
He's gonna keep singing till you turn him off.
I try to be good, yes.
Hold up your Bible.
Cry.
Say it like you mean it. This is my Bible. I am what it says I am. I have what it says I have. I can do what it says I can do. Today I will be taught the Word of God. I boldly confess my mind is alert. My heart is receptive. I will never be the same. In Jesus' name, God bless you.
I like gas.
You're listening to the God Whispers. I'm Craig D'Onofrio. Hey, that was weak.
I was crescendoing into it.
Oh, it's like you got the volume pedal on your
I did.
Axe.
That's
on
it.
On your axe.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah. Hey, we've got Ted Geese on the line here.
We
We're going to talk about scary movies and
scary
that sort
movies.
Of thing.
All right.
But I do want to touch on one thing. As we were talking about all this before the break. I see on Facebook people saying, I won't shop on Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is for family, and people in retail shouldn't be forced to shop on Thanksgiving. And I think that this is not well thought through because there are a lot of people who work on Thanksgiving who, A, don't have family, or, B, are earning time and a half so they can afford Christmas for their kids or all sorts of other things like that. So a lot of times people who work on Thanksgiving ask to work on Thanksgiving because there's some extra money in it for them. And so maybe we should think about that one, too, instead of it just being greedy capitalism.
I do
trying to feed the kids.
I do most of my shopping on the Internet, so Monday. Monday is that's my day.
I don't really go out of the house for much shopping anymore. Amazon has absolutely everything that you could ever need.
Yeah, now you're gonna get Uber delivery, which I think
Uber delivery.
Yeah,
Uber's going into delivery.
Yeah, they're talking about using Uber to deliver packages for same day. So you get an Uber driver to go scoot over to the warehouse and drop stuff off.
I could see that working for. Business deliveries, you know, a document delivery and that sort of thing pretty well also.
Yeah.
Courier service.
Or anything.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Any stuff from Amazon. But I sometimes do early morning cyber shopping before anybody else gets up on Friday morning after Thanksgiving. We're always at my brother's house. So, you know, and they're late risers over there. So I just get on the computer and just do a little cyber shopping.
Personally, I don't see getting up at 2 a.m. to
no.
be at the store by
no.
4.
To be trampled when they open
to be
the
standing
door.
In line for 2 hours in cold weather. To be the first one in the store at 4 to save $50 on a TV or something.
Did you see where
I don't get it.
Where REI is giving their employees the day off and they're encouraging everybody to get outside since REI sells outdoor equipment anyway. So it kind of makes sense.
Oh, so that makes sense.
They want people to go outside. We usually take a hike or do vineyard tours or go to museums. I've been to the Charles Schulz Museum in Santa Rosa, which is really an awesome place if you like peanuts. I've been to the Museum of Computing in Mountain View, which is really cool if you're a geek.
Thanksgiving?
On Friday, the day after on Thanksgiving.
Black Friday. Big day for museums, I guess.
Oh, it's great. And been to the art museum, the De Young up in the Golden Gate Park, too. It's a great day to hit the museums.
Well, let's segue. There we go.
Nice. Nice production value. He's going to be in charge of all the programming broadcasting from Iceland to Turkey.
Apparently, I've got about a second and a half lead on this. I need to trim off.
Yeah.
So anyway, Ted's used to this because I have him on my other show all the time. We talk about movies and stuff. So a little hooray for Hollywood.
Scary movies.
Scary movies. Ted Geese.
Yeah.
Well, you have one in particular that you've been really freaked you out, apparently, because you keep talking about it.
pal.
Yeah, well, you know what? This is how it goes. My wife was out of town. This isn't even that long ago. My wife was out of town.
Any story that begins with that automatically is going in a bad direction.
There you go.
My wife was out of town.
I was working on stained glass window designs for a church in Saskatoon.
Okay.
And I thought, I'll just throw something on in the background, right? So I picked a movie that was one that my wife wouldn't likely watch. It's called The Strangers. It's from 2008. And it was on, on the TV. So I started watching it. It was one of these on-demand things. I started watching it. It has Scott Speedman and Liv Tyler in it. And the general premise is that there's this couple, and they're coming back from a wedding reception, and they're kind of breaking up. And while they're in the middle of a conversation, there's a knock at the door. They're at this cabin in the woods, kind of a cottage kind of a thing. It's like getting to be night. There's a knock on the door, and somebody's asking for somebody, and there's nobody there by that name.
Landshark.
So the one leaves. The guy goes out to get something. She kind of freshens up, and while she's home by herself there at that cottage, that person comes to the door again, and she starts to get weirded out, and she locks the door, and then she's in the kitchen, kind of talking to the guy on the phone. Who had gone off to get something, I can't remember what. But then all of a sudden there's somebody in the place and they've got a mask on. And it got super intense. And I'm busy working on this stuff, but it started to creep in and got super intense, and I turned it off. Now, I don't like to have movies get the better of me, so I did end up finally watching the whole thing the next day when there was, it was light out. And I'm not a terribly, freaked out person. But the premise of the movie is that it's a home invasion thing. There's these three people. There's a guy, a gal, and this young girl, and they just have a mask on. You never see their face. They terrorize this couple in the house. And it kind of gets under your skin. And the part that really, kind of sunk in was the very end. And we do have a little clip of the very end, but there's another little bit a little earlier yet, and we have two audio clips, and we can listen to those and then just kind of talk about it, I guess.
All right, here's the first one.
I do believe in spooks. I do believe in spooks. I do, I do, I do, I do, I do, I do believe in spooks. I do believe in spooks. I do, I do, I do, I do, I do, I do.
Actually, that's not it. I only have the one, Ted.
That scared the daylights out of me right there.
Which one do you have? Do you have the one from the very end?
The one at the end, yeah. I didn't get the other one. I guess it was a little miscommunication in the show.
Sure, program. Yeah. So the one that, Liv Tyler asks, the character Liv Tyler that she's playing, Liv Tyler plays, asks this woman, she says, "Why are you doing this to us?" And in this face mask, the young girl says, "Because you were home."
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun.
And now here's this. I think this is the last clip here.
Yeah, the last one. This one I have. Here we go.
Yeah. There's these two boys.
Can I have one? Are you a sinner? Sometimes.
You know, it's scary because of that flangey sound effect in the background.
Yeah, so what happens is this: the next morning, there's these two kids on bicycles, and they've got these little pamphlets that say Christian living. And the young girl, and this is all shot from a distance, so you still can't see the faces. You never see the faces of the people who did this, this terrible thing to this couple. And you see, from a distance, you have them having this little conversation, and she says, "Can I have one of those?" And says, "Are you a sinner?" And she says, "Sometimes." It's just like, you just watched what happened, and you know that not so much sometimes, is they were just up to something. And that theological end of it kind of starts to sink in. The more you think about it, the more it gets kind of under your skin a little bit too. So,
so wait a minute. So these were a couple of good little Christian kids terrorizing this couple.
No, the little Christian kids had these pamphlets, and these three people who had done all of this terrible stuff, they're leaving the scene of the crime.
Oh. The kids are out riding their bikes evangelizing. They're like, yeah, a couple of 12-year-old kids.
So the actual ones that did the terrorizing, the violence and murder and what have you, they're having a conversation with these little kids on the bikes.
So the kids have these tracks.
The little kid on the bike says, "Are you a sinner?" And the youngest of the three that did this terrorizing, she says, "Sometimes."
You know, there's something particularly creepy about evil done by children, isn't there, Ted?
Yeah. So, and then it looks like this is a Ted, family.
Ted just moves on from that. He just wants
moving
to
on.
Yeah, like, because this is a family. The ones that did this, it's like there's a man and a woman and then this younger girl. It's like this family unit, a mother and a father and a daughter. And the voice you hear in the end is the mother saying to the daughter, "It'll be easier next time."
Here's my favorite horror movie.
What's that?
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I love this song. Big red lips.
Rains was the invisible man. Then something went wrong.
We just have to get to the
they got caught in a cellular jam.
That's so good.
At a deadly pace, it came from outer space.
I just have to get to the late night double feature picture show. All right, that's enough of that.
I like your style, dude.
That's in the category of the Phantom of the Paradiso.
Yes, it is. Oh my! Hey, what's the name of that movie again, Ted?
The Strangers.
The Strangers, and it freaked Ted out. He's been sleeping with his lights on ever since.
Yeah, well, I mean, it happens every once in a while. You get something that just gets under your skin. This is something from recent. I mean, when I was a kid, I remember watching The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing, with that one with Kurt Russell. That had moments in it. But do you guys have something you saw?
Yeah, the first
got under your skin.
The first Halloween movie came out when I was about 12 years old. And my older brother took me to see it, and it freaked me out. I think I slept with the lights on for about three nights after that one. Just really, really disturbed me. Not good for a 12-year-old kid in the 1970s.
No.
Now I'd probably just watch it and laugh.
But when I was a kid, I loved Night Gallery.
Oh, yeah.
And these strange paintings. And, of course, Rod Serling with, you know, this was the successor to the Twilight Zone. My folks were big Twilight Zone fans. And that had some of those episodes had a certain nightmarish creepiness to them.
There's one that Paula loves me talking about the most, I think. And it's a Twilight Zone. And I've got to set up the story. My parents went out to dinner, left my oldest brother in charge of us. He's 9 years older than me, and he loved to terrorize me when I was little, chase me with a vacuum and all sorts of stuff like that. Anyway, we're watching The Twilight Zone, and in this episode, there's this old spinster, and the phone keeps ringing, and there's a guy on the other end, and he keeps saying something like, "What are you doing?" or "Where are you?" or something like that. And it's freaking her out, and he just keeps calling and saying this. And there's a big windstorm, and in the morning, her helper, they get in the car, and they drive out to follow the lines, and the line goes down into the grave of her ex-lover. And right then, our phone rang, and it freaked me out to no end. I was about 8 years old.
Yeah, those...
My brother Vince and I pretty much screamed and ran away.
Leaves kind of a scar. Works. Yeah, I think that I don't see many movies my wife really hates. That, you know, if I'm going to watch a movie like Ted describes, it would have to be one of those "and my wife was out of town" moments. But but we went to see The Silence of the Lambs when it first came out, and we literally had to take like an hour walk after leaving the movie theater, and we was in a mall theater, just to kind of get it out of your system. That one disturbed me. And I think the reason it was so disturbing was this sort of unvarnished evil. You know, this was.
So here's the interesting thing with that. Okay. That movie, particularly the Buffalo Bill character in that movie.
Right.
And Psycho and Texas Chainsaw Massacre are all based on the same actual person, this Ed Gaines. And his actual real like life story was so horrifying that they couldn't even put it into one movie.
Oh, wow.
You know, so here's like, you know, Alfred Hitchcock over here, who's frightening all by himself sometimes. He does Psycho, and then you get Tobe Hooper over there with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is a frightening movie by itself. And like all three of these movies are very psychologically frightening, but they're all based on one guy. So don't Google him, or Google him. It's up to you.
Ed Gaines is his name.
So that's pretty impressive that the degree of evil cannot be contained by a single movie. So the truth...
No, and there was even a little bit from a Stephen King short story. They turned into a movie called Apt Pupil. It kind of runs back into that stream.
What about Stephen King as author, and certainly a number of his books have turned into movies. Well, where does he fit into this genre?
He starts great, but ends poor usually in his books.
Oh, in the books. You know, okay. Yeah.
It, like the beginning of It, like with the clown and the sewer and all of that kind of stuff, very frightening. At the end, spoiler alert, it's a big spider in a cave, like some sort of alien spider in a cave. It's not scary, like the show. But when you have like Tim Curry and the clown makeup and the, you know, for the miniseries It, like that's creepy. The beginning part, right? The end part, not so much. But, you know, with Stephen King, and this is actually an interesting thing for anybody who's engaged in the task of writing, and maybe even writing sermons, let's say, Stephen King has a great book called On Writing, which is kind of a memoir, but also just dealing with writing. He has a whole chapter on how adverbs are no good. It's excellent. But he gets into that whole, like, some of the stories behind why he wrote, like, Carrie and stuff like that. So it's a fascinating, fascinating book if you can get your hands on it.
I did. I think I've watched Carrie and it was on one of the movie channels when I was out of town, and it was just kind of a late night venture into that. And that was interesting. I can't say that I really found myself terrified by that, though. There wasn't. What about the Blair Witch Project? Did you see that?
I did. You know, it's one of those movies. It's like Paranormal Activities. That's another movie series from recently. There was the first one of those, where it's a slow burn, right? And really, it's the last 2 minutes of the movie where the payoff is. So you just kind of have to, like, ride it, like, and just let the tension build, and then that's the way they designed that particular movie. But it's really just the end.
See, I don't like movies that just scare you through cheesy theatrics. Either just, you know, suddenly loud music or the what's behind that door sort of thing. I really prefer the ones that like psychologically damage you.
That's kind of Hitchcockian, though.
Oh yeah, you never really saw anything.
Right.
Oh gosh, when I was a kid, The Birds. That movie scared that. My grandmother loved that movie, and I used to watch it with grandma all the time. And I was strangely compelled. It scared me, but I always wanted to watch that movie.
I could not look.
Yeah, it and you know where there's that one scene up in the attic where the birds have pecked the guy's eyes out and stuff like that. It's like
you know. I've got to share this because Ted told us about Ed Gein, and I was just looking at the Wikipedia, about this guy. And his mother hated his father, and she kind of raised the boys in isolation, he and his brother. And I want to read this little piece here from Wikipedia. Augusta, which is his mother, took advantage of the farm's isolation by turning away outsiders from influencing her son. Edward left the farm only to attend school. Outside of school, he spent most of his time doing chores on the farm. Augusta, a fervent Lutheran, preached to her boys about the innate immorality of the world, the evils of drinking, and the belief that all women were naturally prostitutes and instruments of the devil.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know what kind of Lutheran she is that she would talk about the evils of drinking. I'm just trying to figure that one out.
Pietist, come on.
The other stuff I don't care about, but it's the Lutheran and evils of drinking.
We're loaded with that, Craig. Come on.
This is like the worst case scenario. What can happen if you're imbibing of the Pietist? Kool-Aid.
Yeah, you raise Ed. What's his name? Ed what?
Gain.
Ed Gain.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Wow, that's a horrifying connection.
Yeah, you know. Now you've taken the horror to a new level, Craig.
Pietism.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the horrors of pietism.
Who knew we'd actually come across something frightening?
What is it? I mean, you clearly... Are we done?
No.
Oh, Larry Norman. This is horrifying.
Now, this is something that terrified me when I was young also, were these Rapture movies.
Oh, yeah.
It's a big
The Thief
concept.
In the Night. What's that? Mm. Sorry, Ted?
It's a big concept, you know, like... And it's you know, like that can be a frightening thing. Although the Left Behind movies, you know, are not that frightening.
But when you're like a 7-year-old kid, they
those
are
comical.
Life was filled with guns.
Oh, goodness.
And everyone trampled on the floor.
You know what I like about this is everybody's trampled and he's singing it like one of those love songs from Bread. It's like horrible lyrics. In fact, I've seen some of the YouTube video with this song, you know, and you've got just mayhem, world mayhem going on, and you got this sweet little voice singing this.
It's cognitive dissonance.
Yes, you know, like at its finest.
You've been left behind.
You know, there's a little bit of that where you have a clown or a doll as the prop in these horror movies, right?
You know, what's with the clown thing?
Oh, clowns are scary.
Clowns were fun, and now they're just terrifying.
No. Clowns are scary. There are people who are phobic about clowns.
But they make me laugh at the carnival, at the circus.
It's the mask. You can't trust. You know, like, there's a reason why pastors don't have face makeup, like, or masks.
We do. Wait a minute. We don't?
Putting actual paint on your face and, like, a hood over your head is, like, frightening. It's
the Church of Kiss.
Well, you know, and what's doubly frightening is the clown makeup is ever smiling.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which a lot of pastors do have that, but... But there's something about juxtaposing the innocent and the happy and evil, that evil lurking underneath. That I think it's that juxtaposition that causes the hairs on your neck to stand up, so that you can't even trust this innocent looking rag doll. There's something like evil about it.
Well, and I think that is also, you were mentioning earlier, the whole evil child thing, like in The Shining. You know, with the two little twin girls that just freak you out.
Yes.
And the little boy going red rum and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's scary, but I think it's scary because it's the innocence that is twisted and perverted. A lot like the clowns, something happy that all of a sudden the smiling guy is stabbing you.
Yeah, right.
It's weird.
And he's still smiling.
Right.
What does this tell us about ourselves, Ted, that we're drawn to movies like this, that we want to have the daylight scared out of us? Is there any diagnostic to this? What's wrong with us?
Well, I think that, like, a lot of that is this kind of, like, you walk out of it and you're like, I'm alive, I'm good, I'm, you know, I'm all right, you know, kind of deal. Like, there's that. It's a roller coaster. It's the same sort of thing that draws people to actual roller coasters and things like that. You can have, like, a bit of an adrenaline rush. It's sort of a safe environment. You know, scary movies are always better when you're in a, like, quote-unquote better, when you're in a movie theater full of other people who also want to be scared.
Yeah, that's
true. Because then you have you have the collective kind of experience, right? Or if you're absolutely by yourself, that can also work too.
yeah.
What was that noise in the other room?
That's right. Your wife comes home and finds you in a fetal position in the living room. Clutching a blanket. A broken man.
The movie Scream, when it came out, I was living in Halifax. I saw it, and I lived in a ship captain's house. It was like 200 years old, and it used to go down to the harbor. And we lived in the basement, which is a walk-in basement. And in order to get to the basement, you had to come around outside and up the side of the building and through a fence. And it occurred to me after having seen the movie Scream, which is about a couple guys with a knife kill people, is that there were like five places where somebody could be standing in the shadows with a knife, and I wouldn't have been able to see them. And that kind of played on your brain a little bit. You're like, you know, and maybe I should just be more careful in life. That was the thought.
So there's this business of vulnerability and you know, it's the things that I think the things that we fear the most, first of all, we make fun of. Which I think is part of what the Halloween thing is about. Forget the pagan roots of the whole thing. There's a certain amount of poking fun at like the really deep fears where we don't really want to go. And death is always that's always an element. People are being killed, or people are coming back from the dead, or we're talking to the dead. There's that wall. That inseparable that wall of death that just there's a fascination and a dread and a terror, the pangs of Sheol, that sort of thing.
Now, unfortunately, we are out of time, guys.
Hey, Ted, do you guys celebrate Halloween in Canada?
We sure do. Well, All Hallows Eve.
Well, I mean, like Halloween trick or treat, or do you nail 95 theses to doors and that sort of thing?
We have Halloween. We're actually having an open house on Saturday for our congregation.
We're out of time. Gotta run.
Showing scary movies.
And begin to vocalize. Grim, grinning ghosts come out to socialize.
Now don't close your eyes and don't try to hide.